As we continue our study in the book of Proverbs, we're now ready to begin at verse 16 of chapter 11. In this area of Proverbs, just about every verse is a separate proverb. So we kind of take this verse at a time, but the verses are not connected one with the other, so there's no central theme. Each verse has its own subject, and each verse has its own individual separate lesson. Verse 16 says, "A gracious woman retaineth honor, and strong men retain riches." The NIV version of that verse says, "A kind-hearted woman gains respect, but ruthless men gain only wealth." The word for strong is also translated as ruthless in the NIV and violent in the American Standard Bible. But gracious is also translated as kind, pleasant, and precious. So we have a woman with the qualities of being kind, pleasant, and gracious, contrasted with a man who is strong, ruthless, and violent. So the man who has the ability to participate in the ways of the world to the fullest may be very successful financially. He may be very accomplished with all of his gain, but the riches of the world are all he has. He is not noted for having a pleasant character of honor and kindness. In the end, he has only the riches of the world, which he has ruthlessly and or violently acquired. But the kind, pleasant, gracious woman has much more. She has honor. She is respected and given glory as an honorable and highly respected person. This says nothing about her riches. She may have honor and riches, but she has honor for sure. The most value to have is honor. This God is pleased with. The absence of honor is the absence of what God desires, according to Isaiah 3, verse 5. So a woman with honor is infinitely richer than a strong, ruthless, violent man with riches, even though she may not have worldly riches. The 16th verse says again, "A gracious woman retaineth honor, and strong men retain riches." That's the King James Version. NIV, "A kind-hearted woman gains respect, but ruthless men gain only wealth." So we see how much more precious then and more valuable the honor is than it is just to have ruthless strength to get wealth. Verse 17, another proverb, "The merciful man doeth good to his own soul, but he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh." Here we learn that to have a healthy body and spirit, one must be merciful. The word merciful includes the qualities of kindness, good deeds, and a strong devotion towards God. The presence or absence of these qualities have a definite effect on our health, physical and spiritual. The science of psychology has also discovered this fact, but the Bible here states it quite plainly so that it's not new information for the person who studies the Bible. So a merciful, kind, and a God-respecting person not only does good and helps those around him, but he's also doing the best for himself. He has the pleasure of doing his duty to God and other humans, and yet still doing the very best thing for himself. He need have no guilt, feelings, or remorse due to mistreating others or God, for his life is free from those sins. Every duty God has prescribed for humans is consistent with good mental and physical health. Now that is quite a statement, and it's one that we Christians would like to believe. We would like to believe that, yes, if I do what God wants me to do, this is the best thing for me, mentally and spiritually, and physically. And other parts of the Bible teach this also, which gives us more encouragement as we think along these lines. For example, Isaiah chapter 58, verses 1 through 11 give this idea, and I'd like to read those verses. Isaiah 58, 1 through 11, the NIV version. "Shout it aloud, do not hold back, raise your voice like a trumpet, declare to my people their rebellion, and to the house of Jacob their sins. For day after day they seek me out. They seem eager to know my ways, as if they were a nation that does what is right and has not forsaken the commands of its gods. They ask me for just decisions and seem eager for God to come near them. Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen it? Why have we humbled ourselves and you have not noticed? Yet on the day of your fasting, you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife, and striking each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for a man to humble himself? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying on sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords and the yoke and to set the oppressed free and break every yoke. Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe him and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, Here am I. If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Here we see that God clearly promises to bring about good when His people do good. And if we look around about us, we see that the general nature of things all lend truth to this proverb, that when you are good, this brings good to you. No mental or physical or spiritual condition is made better by anger or sin. Yet no mental or physical or spiritual condition is made worse by being kind to others and obeying God. And there's good reason to believe that obedience to God and kindness to others may help any human condition. Yet a cruel, cantankerous, ill-natured person troubles his own flesh, the proverb says. The word cruel comes from a root word meaning fierce, violent, terrible, and then cruel. So it would be just the opposite of merciful. Instead of doing what is good for him, spiritually or physically, he troubles his own flesh. So his sin becomes his punishment. He starves and dies needing what he already has because he has not the spiritual life to use it, either for the good of others or for his own good. He is obnoxious to those around him, and this has a definite effect upon his own health. His immune system is down, and he's more susceptible to disease, mental, spiritual, and physical. To be out of harmony with God's will has an adverse effect on the total being, but to be in harmony with God's will is to have a favorable effect on the total person. Proverbs 14, verse 30, NIV version, a heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bone. 1 Corinthians 11, 29 and 30, King James, For he that eateth and drinketh unworthily, eateth and drinketh damnation to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. For this cause many are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep. Again, let's read verse 17, this proverb we're studying. The merciful man does good to his own soul, but he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh. It simply is telling us that the better we serve God, the better we help ourselves in all other areas of life, mental, physical, and spiritual. Verse 18 is our next proverb. The wicked worketh a deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward. To whatever extent sinners expect a good reward for their work, to that extent they are deceived. For the proverb says here, the wicked worketh a deceitful work. The wicked builds himself a house on the sand, which will deceive him when the storm comes. He promises himself a reward for his sin, which he will never gain. Romans 7, verse 11, For sin, taking occasion by the commandment, deceived me, and by it slew me, the Apostle Paul says. It is also possible that, as we read here in this psalm, a deceitful work may refer to the fact that the wicked attempt to deceive others with their works, which is true, and yet even with deceptive works, they do not yield the riches their deception seeks. But not so with the godly person. He soweth righteousness with which there is no deception. A proverb says, To him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward. The righteous person does that which is good. He doesn't just do that which looks to be good. He does that which is good. He makes it his business to do good. He looks forward to a future payment, which will be a sure reward. No deception in the reward either. No deception in the act of doing good. No deception in the reward. His reward is made as sure to him as the eternal truth of God can make it. In Galatians 6, verses 7 through 9, "Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not." So let's read this verse 18 again, which is our proverb that we're studying. "The wicked worketh a deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward." Verse 19 contains our next proverb. "As righteousness tendeth to life, so he that pursueth evil pursueth it to his own death." It is well understood by Bible scholars that the divine judgment of God will cause righteousness to end in life, while the same judgment of God will cause wickedness to end in death. But this proverb also teaches that righteousness, of its own nature, has a direct tendency to life, while wickedness brings about death. True holiness is true happiness. All of its aims and objectives are designed to be compatible with love, peace, and things which are in the best interest of the well-being of humans. Righteousness inclines, disposes, and leads the soul to life. But by the same token, those that indulge in sin are fitting themselves for destruction. The more violent a person is in pursuing sin, the more eagerly he is set upon his own destruction. His actions increase his chances for destruction and hasten the time of it. So let us read verse 19 again, which is where this proverb is found. This is the NIV version. "The truly righteous man attains life, but he who pursues evil goes to his death." Verse 20, our next proverb. "They that are of a froward heart are abominable to the Lord, but such as are upright in their way are his delight." The word for froward is translated as distorted, crooked, or perverse. Perverse means to purposely continue in what one knows to be wrong or unreasonable. The word for heart means the feeling, the will, the intellect. An abomination is something that is hated. So the person who has the mindset to purposely continue in what he knows to be wrong has the very thing hated by God. Imagine living the kind of life that God hates. It is interesting for us to know what God hates and what he loves, that we may guide ourselves accordingly. We want to avoid his displeasure and bring ourselves into his favor. So this proverb gives us important information. Here we are told that nothing is more offensive to God than for a person to intentionally continue to do something he knows to be wrong. Deliberately walking in crooked ways which are contrary to the straight paths of righteousness. These are not sins of ignorance, but these are intentional sins. Hebrews 10, 26 and 27, "For if we sin willfully after we receive the knowledge of the truth, there remains no more sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful looking for of judgment and a fiery indignation, which shall devour the adversaries." But there is nothing more pleasing to God than those who are upright in their way. They are honest and sincere in their desire to please God and work hard at avoiding those actions which are contrary to righteousness. Their heart or mindset is geared to carry out God's will. They work so that his will be done on earth as it is in heaven. These people are, he says, his delight. These he even boasts of. "Hast thou considered my servant Job?" Job 1 verse 8. So we again read verse 20, NIV version. "The Lord detests men of perverse heart, but he delights in those whose ways are blameless." The next verse, verse 21 of Proverbs 11. "Though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished, but the seed of the righteous shall be delivered." To join hand in hand is to unite together. Here we learn that though the wicked join forces, the combined power of the wicked cannot free them from just punishment. Yet the unaided children of the righteous find deliverance as a result of their relationship with God. The joined forces of sin shall certainly be broken and shall not be able to protect sinners. Though they join hand in hand, he says, though there are many that agree as they continue to practice wickedness, though they be few in number or be thousands in standing together and defending their way of life against all the attacks of virtue and justice, though they are united for the support and propagation of sin, though wicked children tread in the steps of their wicked parents and resolve to keep up their sinful practices and thus defy the way of God, yet this will not protect them from the justice of God. They shall not be held guiltless. It will not excuse them to say that they did as most others did and as their companions did. They shall not be unpunished. Take note of the flood brought upon a whole world of ungodly people. Their number and strength and agreement in sin will do them no good when the day of judgment comes. But the children of the righteous certainly shall be blessed. The seed of the righteous that follow in the steps of their righteous forefathers, though they may have trouble, will in due time be delivered, he says. They shall be delivered. Though justice may come slowly to punish the wicked, and mercy may come slowly to save the righteous, yet both will come surely. Sometime the seed of the righteous, though they are not themselves righteous, have been temporarily delivered for the sake of their godly ancestors, as Israel often was. Yet even these will only be delivered at the great day of judgment according to their own righteousness. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body, according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. In the end, we're going to be judged according to what we've done, and not according to what our forefathers have done. We may receive extra blessings in this life because we had godly forefathers. We may receive extra blessings because God granted them favor to have their posterity to be blessed. But in the end, on the great judgment day, it'll be done what we've done in our bodies, whether it be according to that which is good or bad. Verse 21, let's read it again. Though hand joined in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished, but the seed of the righteous shall be delivered. The next proverb in verse 22, as a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. This is a very interesting proverb. The word translated as discretion carries the idea of taste, feeling, understanding, and discretion. Discreet is defined as having or showing good judgment and self-restraint in speech and behavior. To be cautious or tactful. To be truly discreet includes the idea of being a godly person. So just as a jewel of gold is out of place and wasted in a swine's snout, even so is a beautiful body out of place in a woman who is ungodly and behaves in an inappropriate manner. We note here that a beautiful body is as a jewel of gold, a very valuable thing, and with the wisdom and grace to guard against the temptations of it, it is a great ornament. Beauty is greatly enhanced when it's associated with virtue. But a foolish, wanton woman who lacks good judgment or self-restraint in speech and behavior is fittingly compared to a swine. Though she be ever so handsome and have the perfect beautiful body, she is as the swine wallowing in the mire of filthy lust. The mind and conscience are defiled, and though appearing to be washed, immediately returns to the mire. It is truly sad to see beauty so abused. Yet this misuse of beauty occurs by those who do not have modesty and discretion to accompany the beauty. It seems as though this beauty has been misplaced on them. The beauty is actually in the wrong place, as a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, with which he roots in a dunghill. If beauty is not guarded by virtue, the beauty is misplaced and loses its true value and usefulness. This same principle might be applied to all other bodily endowments and accomplishments, such as mental ability, artistic ability, and the ability to speak well, and the blessings of earthly wealth. It is a pity that those who have such endowments given by God do not have the good wisdom to use them well. To some extent, more or less, we have been amply blessed by God, and we should act accordingly. Let's not have our actions cause our blessings and endowments of beauty to look like a jewel in a swine's snout. Verse 22 says again, as a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. The next proverb, verse 23, the desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath. The word translated as desire also means a longing or satisfaction. The word translated as good means beneficial, morally right, and that which causes gain or improvement. The word translated as expectation means hope or a thing longed for. To expect is to believe that something will happen. The word translated as wrath means an outburst of passion, anger, rage, or wrath. Wrath means violent rage or fury. This proverb tells us what the desire of the righteous is and what the expectation of the wicked is. We also learn what the righteous would have and what the wicked will have. The righteous would have good and only good, that which is beneficial, morally right, or that which causes improvement. All they desire is that things go well with all about them. They wish no hurt to any, but happiness to all. And for themselves, their desire is not to gratify any evil lust, but to the favor of a good God, and to maintain the peace which goes with a good conscience. And they shall have that good which they desire. But the wicked will have wrath. They desire times of conflict and outbursts of passion with rage or violence. They want to gratify their passion and revenge. They want to remove those that stand in their way, that they may have all the advantage to themselves. And wrath they shall have, and so shall their doom be. They expect and desire to do wrong to others, but it shall return upon themselves. As they love conflict and violence, so they will have their fill eventually. The principle taught in this proverb, that the desire of the righteous is only good, and the expectation of the wicked is wrath, that principle is taught other places in the Bible also. The 37th Psalm teaches this. Let me read a few of the verses in that Psalm. This is the NIV version. Do not fret because of evil men, or be envious of those who do wrong, for like the grass they will soon wither, like green plants they will soon die away. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. That's our lesson. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.